club football, he pisses all over him. So
yeah. It's just Messi. We all know what Messi can do.
A lot of flair, a lot of skill.
People might forget the names, but the streets certainly won't.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whenever you're listening to this, welcome back to another FT Lowell podcast episode. We are back again with another feature session. We've got a very special guest for this one. Joining me today is former England Crystal Palace football player and amongst other clubs. He also played for my Sunday league side, Eversley Rangers. Today's guest is Mr. John Zalarco. How are you doing, sir?
I'm very well, thank you very much.
Good stuff, good stuff. You've been commentating on AFCON, haven't you?
How's that been going? That's been brilliant. I was very lucky to go with the BBC when I got injured back in 92. I was out injured. A Palace fan who was he was a producer for North One Television was making the African Cup of Nations for the BBC. And he asked me if I'd like to go along. And I said, I'd love to. So off we went to Senegal in a VW bus, me, him and a cameraman. And we travelled around and we covered the African Cup of Nations and it was absolutely incredible. One of the best experiences of my life. And my dad was Nigerian. Unfortunately, he died when I was five. So I was brought up by my mum, who's English and brought up here in England as very English. But my first call up was Nigeria. But I turned them down because I wanted to play for England. The African Cup of Nations is wonderful and it's always bright, colourful, exuberant and absolutely brilliant to watch. So, you know, absolute pleasure to be covering it for Sky as a co-commentator. I think I've done about four or five games so far. And the competition's just reaching that group stage. It's finishing and the last 16 will be starting sort of come the weekend. So, yeah, it's getting exciting.
Nice. And, yeah, so you're on today to talk about the greatest 11 of players that you've played with. But before we get into your 11, how did it all start for you in terms of football? Did you start young?
Yeah, do you know what? I mean, I played football from a very young age with my brothers. I had three brothers. And then when we, you know, I was playing for England, I probably started playing for West Ham Reds when I was 10. And that was the first team I played for. And then obviously, as you mentioned, I played for Eversley Rangers. I think when I was I was about 16, I played for Eversley Rangers. There was one season and it was amazing because the guys lived, I think, over in sort of past Bromley. And they used to come and, you know, sort of pick me up and take me over there and play and drop me back. So it was a really good side, played against, you know, that was top level because, you know, a lot of that in a sort of South London was some fantastic players. And a lot of them signed for Wimbledon, Charlton, Palace. A lot of the kids I played up against in that league, the top players were all, you know, I played against in the Southeast Counties a year later.
Yeah, because around that time, sort of late 80s, early 90s as well, there's a lot of good sides in South London. Obviously, Wimbledon won the cup, what was it, 88, 89? That was a big shock. And that's just one of a few sides, as you mentioned. We're getting a little bit of a revival with that now. Palace particularly, obviously looking very strong. Were you a Palace fan growing up?
No, I didn't go and watch any Palace games. The first game I ever went to see was at Arsenal at Highbury.
Okay.
I actually played Sunderland and as a 14-year-old kid, school trip. So really all I ever did was really watch football on the television. And, you know, when I grew up, Liverpool winning everything. So, of course, I had a Liverpool bag and a Liverpool scarf.
Yeah.
Typical, you know, sheep as a kid. But there was no real rhyme or reason, but they were winning. So I think most kids gravitate towards the best teams, don't they, so?
Yeah. I mean, we saw that, 10 years later with Man United.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter where you're from. There's got a lot of support there as well. So, yeah, I'm Arsenal myself, actually.
Okay.
So, not enjoying the best times, but hopefully future is a bit brighter than we've had the last few years.
Yeah, do you know what? It's football. I mean, what Sir Alex Ferguson did at Man United for 22 years was just incredible. And obviously, you know, for Arsenal, I've got a soft spot for Arsenal. And, you know, Arsene Wenger did a similar thing at Arsenal. Mm. And unfortunately, once they leave, it's very hard to reproduce that and to pick up the reins and for someone to come in and take it forward. So obviously, Arteta in there at Arsenal now has got a job to do. And I think he's doing pretty well. Just likewise, you know, Solskjaer obviously came into Man United, but they can't find anyone to replace him. Whether it's, you know, Jose Mourinho's tried, Van Gaal's tried, Moyes tried, and now poor old Ragnick's trying as well. So, you know, they're still searching for that manager to come in, searching for a Tuchel or a Guardiola or a Klopp to come in and then be lucky with the signing. So it's interesting times, although, you know, it's a shame. The only downside is Man City running away with the league title again. I was hoping it'd be a bit more of a fight. So it's really that fourth position is...
It was looking pretty good, wasn't it? But then the last, since December, they've just hit another gear, and Chelsea, Liverpool particularly just haven't done that, have they? And they've run away with it, as you say. But there's still a lot of good stuff in the Prem, as you say, the top four race, relegation as well. If we get into your team, John, what formation have you gone with?
Do you know what? I mean, the biggest question I wanted to ask is really, is that just club players? Someone, do you know what? I'm probably just going to pick a club side.
Okay, that's fine.
Rather than an international side, because that's just, I think, in all honesty, it just completely changes it. I mean, my starting 11 will be, you know, it'll just be in Gazzers and Lineker and Stuart Pearce and Tess Walker. So, but yeah, I think I'm just going to go for a club side, club 11.
Okay.
Which I think would be more, you know,
reflective of your career, maybe.
Yeah, because I think it, you know, it's easy to pick a lot of international players, but I think, you know, obviously, I think sort of starting at Palace, then heading out to Coventry, Charlton, Reading, and then obviously, Fulham, Reading, and then obviously having that last year at Brentford. So there's a fair bit of choice. But I think, yeah, pretty sure, I think, you know, who should be in the side and who shouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope you don't upset too many people with this.
Well, there's always going to be people. I mean, unfortunately, it's one of those things where, it's not very nice when you get left out, but it is what it is, so.
Yeah. Okay, so in between the sticks.
I think in between sticks is probably the most straightforward decision. Is Nigel Martin is just the most incredible goalkeeper. I think he's as good as anyone, in all honesty, that has played. He was just incredible. Brilliant shot stopper. Came for crosses, dominated his box. The only thing, perhaps, you know, one little chink that I didn't think was massive. He wasn't a great talker. He wasn't like a Schmeichel who would berate or get into. He was more of a David Seaman. He was quiet, went about his business. You know, I think when I grew up, you always used to think that, you know, keepers had to be lunatics and sort of extroverts and loud and brash. But, you know, the modern keeper, you know, I played with Chris Woods at England, David Seaman, and, you know, they were quiet keepers. You know, there was a new crop of a brand of keepers that just go quietly about their business. But I think you're just absolutely sensational, Nigel Martin.
Yeah. I mean, probably I caught him from Leeds onward rather than his time at Palace, I think. But all you hear about Martin is he's one of the most talented English goalies out there, and he should have got a lot more caps than he did get.
Yeah, and exactly. I think because he was quiet, I don't think he really... sort of shouted from the rooftops, you know, he didn't, you know, Leeds and then Everton. I thought it was just incredible. And I think at the time, I personally would have played him ahead of, as I said, Seaman and Chris Woods. Mm. And they were, you know, phenomenal goalkeepers.
Yeah. It's a good start. Strong choice. So you're going four at the back?
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm going to go with a 4-4-2. Okay. I think that's reflective of the time I played. I think the 4-3-3s and the three, you know, sort of, you know, sort of 3-5-2s, a modern sort of era. I think the sweeper system had just come into the game, you know, but it's all fads. I think coaches are very easily influenced and, you know, they're a bit sheepish, I think, in the way everyone sort of goes along with the latest way of playing and the latest sort of gimmick in the game, the trends and fashions, as I call them. You know, football's a very simple game, overcomplicated by coaches, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it is the players that win you the stuff on the pitch, and it's just about the manager G'ing them up and getting the most out of them, isn't it?
It's incredible. You look at the game now. I mean, I just don't recognise it, in a sense where, you know, you sort of have the two centre halves splitting in the box. Obviously, with the law change, you can't touch them. And then the full-backs are, and then they try and put play through. And yeah, 80% of the goals you see are win-backs in that last third. People overplaying in their defensive third, giving away the ball. Mm. And it obviously leads to a goal. And, you know, it's very predictable and I think very pedestrian to watch, rather than people breaking teams down and great bits of skill and getting behind teams and breaking them open. So arguably, I mean, Man City do it the best, play through the lines. Liverpool do it very well, but Liverpool mix it up. And actually, when, you know, most teams at their best for me, when they're exciting to watch.
Yeah.
And, is when we're, you know, they're going full up, back and through wide and beyond and breaking the lines and people going past people. And, you know, that bit of skill invention that we all want to see to get us out of our seats. So, you know, you need, you know, and that's really the manager encouraging players to do that.
Mm. Yes, I think, yeah, what you said about Liverpool, they're definitely the most exciting team for me, like taking the Arsenal bias out of it in the Premier League, because they, I don't know, football seems a bit robotic at times, a little bit too tactical. It's
it's the craziness of it. I call it painting, you know, three pictures. You know, it's like you set up a, you know, a pattern of play, and you say, right, full, you know, the centre back split, it goes to the centre back, then it comes back, and then, you know, the four might come on the pivot and come and get the ball, then it goes out the other side, you know, but it doesn't, you know, really what you're doing is you're giving them basic instructions of really what you can do and what you should have in your head, but then you've got to play it by if you're getting closed down or not, or the situation. So if it's in a tight situation, then that ball isn't on. The keeper doesn't give it to that player. And then, you know, that player's got to be aware that he's got to have one touch and then you've got to play it to the right side. So, you know, you've got to be able to be adaptable and change, not just think, right, this is what we did in training. It went to him, then it went to him, then he went. And you can see so many players doing that. Mm. And it's crazy. And if someone mixes it up and all of a sudden they get closed down, they don't know what to do and they panic. And then it often results in a goal. So it's kind of crazy for me. I think, you know, I would basically start as high up as I can. And often the way to break teams down is to get it up the other end as quickly as possible, box it in and get men up there and cause people problems. But, you know, the game will adapt, will change, it'll evolve. At least there's more tackling in the game. It's a little bit more competitive. Whereas at one stage, it got a bit turgid where you couldn't make tackles. You couldn't, you know, have any physicality. Mm. But funny enough, it was the Euros, really. I think, and the World Cups have shown us the way where the refereeing has been a little bit more lenient and a little bit more, you know, on the side of, you know, getting on with it and a little bit more swashbuckle about the game. So, and that's what we enjoy about it. You know, you want to see tackles. You want to see the physicality of it. And a lot of players are just playing up to it. So it's just strong refereeing, which is good.
Mm-hmm. All right. So full-backs, right back?
Yeah, I think I played with a lad, Roland Nilsson, Swedish international at Coventry.
Yeah. Ex-Sheffield Wednesday as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was sensational. He played in a very successful Sheffield Wednesday side and just Mr. Immaculate. He was fantastic, you know, one of the best pros I worked with. Great defender, you know, great going forward, very composed and assured. And, you know, he was incredible.
Yeah, we had a feature session where we had a Sheffield Wednesday fan on doing something similar for the greatest 11 of players he'd seen in his lifetime for his club. And he had Roland Nilsson at right back as well. And, yeah, couldn't talk. From funny enough of him.
Yeah, incredible. Seriously, I mean, one of the best pros. To say he came in, he was a joy to work with. He was an inspiration. He was a role model, and he was an incredible player. Just a great talker and a great pro. Fantastic, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, he must have been one of the first sort of Scandinavian guys to come in for the Prem, right? I know, yeah, I think Jan Mulby would have been there, but
yeah, if you think about, I think you know, sort of Ipswich, Frank Tyson, you know, sort of Bobby Robson had brought a couple of Scandinavians to Ipswich, very successful. And that, you know, the Scandinavians very much watch our football, and their football was very much built on our same game. So they adapted, and they were strong, hard running, fit players. So their game was very much similar to ours, and they were the first to be very adaptable to the English game. So you found like a lot of, it was an easy transition for the Scandinavians to come and play in England. And they loved it, and they, you know, they love the system, they love English football. And it's changed, but yeah, they were very easy to integrate into football clubs because of, you know, they played the same systems and they watched English football.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And on the other side, left back?
Left back, I'm going for, again, probably a very underrated player, a quiet, unassuming player that I think only got one or two caps for England. Should have got more. Chrissy Powell, played with him at Charlton.
Yeah.
He was fantastic defender, great going forward. Perhaps didn't really, you know, have that confidence and that belief in himself. Again, another lad who was just happy to sit and just, you know, just be nice and you know, didn't demand too much in loud dressing rooms and big characters. Again, but, you know, he was a lad that just did an incredible job for the team. He was very quick, great defender. As I say, went forward well, could pass, could pick a pass, you know, good vision. He was everything a left back should be. And, you know, he's gone on to be a manager, successful manager. He's now, you know, one of the assistant coaches at England. Yeah, I think he was underrated as a player. He's underrated as a manager, but understands the game, great knowledge and, you know, got everything for me to play as that fullback.
Yeah, I didn't realise he was a sort of quiet character because obviously with his management and I think he was captain, wasn't he, of Charlton for a little bit as well. I wouldn't have had him down as a kind of quieter guy in the dressing room.
Yeah, he was. I mean, obviously he had something to say. If he needed something to say, then, you know, he would say it. So, yeah, I mean, he was no shrinking violet. You know, he was no, you know, wallflower. He was a strong character, but again, he wasn't just an aggressive, you know, against fullbacks like, you know, maybe your Julian Dix, your Stuart Pearce's. There was, you know, left backs always seemed more aggressive to me than right backs. Although, you know, there was some, but, you know, the left backs almost seemed to be a little bit more aggressive. I don't know why, but I always think you watch someone with a cultured left foot always seems more graceful than a right footer, by, you know. I may be biased as a left footer. It's like, I don't know, if you watch a left-handed, like a Phil Mickelson's golf or David Gower batting or, you know, sort of Ben Stokes, they always just, it just, that left-hander always looks more.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
When you watch a Johnny Barnes or a Mahrez or a Chrissy Waddle, just that balance and the way they run. I mean, you're just watching Bertrand Traore today, Mahrez yesterday. So watching those left footers. My all-time great player, Maradona, was left-footed. Lionel Messi, left foot. You know, it's just one of those things. But let's move on.
Yeah. So, centre-backs.
Centre-backs. I would have to go for the first one I'm going to choose is go back to Charlton again. It was a lad called Richard Rufus.
Okay, yeah.
Richard Rufus. And again, I think he only got a handful of England caps, but He was just incredible. He was a centre back. He was so quick. He was so strong, and he was so hard in the tackle. And he could add a leap. And I think he was phenomenal. And when we came up with Charlton, I think he was really the cornerstone that, you know, went up to finish eighth twice in a row. And you know, he was fantastic. And he was really the rock of that that defence and that team. And he was sensational in a sense where, you know, one on ones and, you know, reading the game or, you know, that bit of pace to get us out of trouble, you know, to defend. Yeah, he was special.
Yeah, it goes under the radar because in that sort of Charlton side of that, when Kerbishley was there doing his stuff, yeah, I think there's a lot of names I'd probably think of before thinking of Richard Rufus. But yeah,
Yeah, if you played with him,
yeah,
he was a machine. He was a machine. He played every game, but he's tackling, you know, the covering, and you know he's everything that you'd want in a centre back. And obviously the other lad that I'm going to pick, you know, sort of partnered with him, and it reminds me very much of Cavallo and John Terry at the heart of the Chelsea team when they won the championships that they won, and the rock and the rock, the bed that was. You know, gave everyone the platform to go and play. So I my captain when I was at Palace was, oh God, he's Andy Thorne. Nearly trumped out of my head now. Andy Thorne was a bit like, it was John Terry. He read the game so incredibly well. His talking, the way he led the line off on and off the pitch, he was just such an intelligent player. Not the quickest. And you know, if he'd have had a turn of pace, then he would have got 100 caps for England. But such an intelligent player, key man, and he really did boss the back four. He ran it, and he was a key team member, and he was a captain first and foremost. So you know, there was a 3-4 year period where, you know, you'd think it'd be a mismatch up against some of the centre forwards in the Premier League, but I never once really saw anyone ever really take the Mickey out of him. And it was the same with John Terry. I think he was just one step ahead of everyone. He knew when to drop, he knew when to get tight, and he could play at the back. He was very comfortable, and the ball was good in the air. And he would complement Richard Rufus perfectly.
Yeah, yeah, that's ultimately what you want as well from a partnership, isn't it? You want the strengths from two different that kind of blend together well. You don't want two really aggressive going forward centre-backs and no one there that's kind of a calming influence or no pace or whatever. But yeah, it sounds like you've got a nice mix of both there.
And like John Terry, he was a right-footed centre-half that could play on the left-hand side because they're very rare and they're hard to find. It's almost like a little bit of gold dust. Is that left-footed, left-sided centre? I play with Matthew Upson. I mean, one of the things maybe you should do is give a special mention to certain people that came very close to getting into that side. So, you know, like a left-footed, you know, Chris Coleman was exceptional centre-half. You know, Eric Young, who played alongside of Andy Thorne. You know, he was amazing at centre-half. You know, Kit Simons was fantastic. So, you know, there's lots of good centre-halves that played with along the way. But, you know, yeah, certainly, yeah, Andy Thorne and Richard Rufus.
Thorne in the cup final side, wasn't
he? Yeah. So Andy Thorne was the centre half when we finished third in the top flight, won the Zenith Daters, and the year before, yeah, we played Man United in the FA Cup. Mm. Yeah, we would have beaten Liverpool at Villa Park, and then went to a replay in the final against United.
Yeah, did you finish third? Was that when English clubs were banned from Europe?
Yeah, so that year 91, I think it was.
Mm.
We finished third. Liverpool finished second, and Liverpool were banned at the time because of the Heysel Stadium situation, and they let Liverpool back in. We should have got into Europe, in fairness, but a bit of politics there, but hey ho, that's what happened.
So, midfield.
Yeah, midfield. That's
interesting.
Yeah, I think that the midfield was probably the toughest call, but finally reached. So, Andy Gray was arguably the most talented player of that Palace group. He was really amazing. And I say that because I think the only disappointing thing with Andy, I don't really think Andy made the most of his talent, and he didn't really apply himself. If he'd applied himself in the same way that Ian Wright did, Mark Bright did. I mean, I think Brighty, with limited talent, made so much of himself. Brighty took himself by the scruff of the neck. He worked every day. He was so determined. He was so, he was so passionate. He watched everything. He tried everything. You know, he was just destined. You know, he dragged himself and just made himself better, and used everything in his powers. Another very average player, in my opinion, who just made so much of himself with intelligence, work rate, using all the nutrition, all the psychology and everything, and he's done it. It's Gareth Southgate. He was a captain at 22. You know, I give special mention probably to Gareth Southgate and Geoff Thomas. You know, Gareth by no means, you know, was very talented, but he made such a career out of himself in centre mid, and then he went to centre half. And he did things very simply, but just made the most of himself. And, you know, he's shown his intelligence and that kind of dedication and passion and that sort of, you know, knowledge of football and you know, just that brilliantly calm, thinking, working man. That, and, he's done an incredible job as a manager and obviously for England. And I partner up with Andy Gray because Andy Gray could, you know, sorry, not partnering up with Andy Gray is my first choice in there, but he could play past his Andy. Andy could tackle. He had a great engine. He was brave as a lion. And the reason why I'm going to play, and I'd probably play him as a four. And the other player I'd play is Gary McAllister. Gary captained us at Coventry. And he came, and I thought Gary was at the end of his career, and he came and he was sensational for us. Just an absolute world-class player. And then he went on to Liverpool after that.
And they won, thought it was the end of his career there. And then he did even more. Then, good stuff.
You know, sort of Benitez got the best out of him, and they went and won, you know, sort of Champions Leagues and some nice trophies. And, you know, Liverpool was starting on that ascendancy back again. But yeah, as a captain, Gary McAllister, just the ability to find space, to find room in midfield and to play passes, get forward, score goals, free kicks.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the one. I mean, Andy Gray was more of a, you know, if it was there to be hit, you know, he took penalties as well. But yeah, you know, sort of, I could see Andy holding as a four, and Gary McAllister playmaking and going forward as an eight. Yeah, Geoff Thomas and Gareth Southgate, and lucky not to get in there.
Big call. Geoff Thomas and Gareth Southgate missing out. That just shows.
That could be a nice midfield, is Gareth and Geoff. You know, that would have complemented each other, left and right footed in there. Geoff was unlucky because Geoff was our Captain Marvel. Great engine. You know, limited player. He'll admit that. But he was brave as a lion. He was strong, great tackler. He's one that, you know, he'd get it and give it to the others to go play. You know, he'd drive us forward. And as I say, you know, just a very brilliant, you know, great guy, trained, you know, incredible pro. But engine-wise, I mean, he rides Tour de France, is now and doing all kinds of crazy stuff that just shows what kind of engine is under that bonnet. So, yeah, unlucky to miss out. There was a few. Paul Bracewell was incredible. Played with him towards the end at Fulham. You know, obviously Scotty Parker at Charlton, Stevie Sidwell at Reading. There were some decent players, but yeah, McAllister and Gray.
Nice. And are you having yourself on the left or?
Yeah, do you know what? I'm not gonna go. I don't think I should go for myself. I think there's two outstanding players that I've played with probably towards the end of their careers, but were still sensational. Were just great players. And on the right, I'm gonna have Ray Houghton.
Oh, when did you play with
that? He came to Palace. He came to Palace towards the end of his career. And he it gets tougher and tougher, really, I think, as you start getting into the forward positions, because you're sort of leaving out some great players. But Ray Houghton was just a class act, even at an older age. And, you know, on the left, I'm gonna play Peter Beardsley. And again,
fair enough.
So I mean, Peter Beardsley was just one of the best players I think England we've ever produced in this country.
And
he was sensational. And again, it's one of those where, you know, I wouldn't expect him to be going, staying wide too much. He'd be coming inside. coming and linking with the centre forwards and coming and doing his leg, Chrissy Beaumont, you know, down the wings as would probably Ray Houghton on the right, you know, with Roland Nielsen, you know, sort of supporting him and going down the right. They would play more as a narrower four.
Yeah, I guess if you play with Peter Beardsley, you've got to find a way to put him in the team.
They could.
Magician.
Yeah. I mean, special mention to Peter and Love, I played with at Coventry. He was a sensational wide player, and he's unlucky not to get in the side. Mm. He was really quite special. But, yeah, Beardsley and Houghton.
Mm. Nice. And your front two, I mean, I can guess there's certainly one that I'm sure is going to be in there, but...
Yeah.
The other one...
It's difficult, really, because, you know, I fancied myself as a centre forward. And, you know, when I was coming through, obviously, you had Brighton Wright and we had an abundance. You had a few strikers at the time. So, you know, those positions were kind of taken. Stevie Cobbett asked if I'd like to play on the left. And I said, yeah, I'll play anywhere. So give me a shirt. And I ended up staying there. But I think the biggest influence on me and the best player I played with at club level and by far... the most special player, the most effervescent, passionate, just determined, skillful player, and an absolute joy to work with and play with was Ian Wright.
Mm.
And he was just beginning, you know, he was on a journey and he'd grown and to be fair, when he went to Arsenal, it was just, you know, he found his stage, he found his rightful place, and he was able to open up the taps and achieve everything that was coming to him that he deserved. So, you know, my favourite player was Thierry Henry and Dennis Bergkamp. And, you know, to go in there and obviously play with Dennis more and Thierry came later. He must, you know, he just couldn't believe, you know, he thought he was in a fairy tale dream. But he made the most of it. I think if Ian Wright was just... incredible, but he was like that anyway. You know, he picked us all up. He dragged us all along with his energy and his passion, his determination. So, you know, we all have so much, you know, we owe Ian for what he brought to Palace for the short time he was there. But it was a wonderful period, and we were grateful for that.
Mm. So it's the same behind the scenes as he is in front of the camera.
Yeah, no. Yeah, even more. Yeah. I mean, you can imagine a young Wright, he was just, he was insatiable. He was unstoppable. You know, he just wanted to, he just wanted to train and play. He just loved football so much. He just wanted it so much. It's hard to describe his energy levels. And he was just bouncing off the walls. He was like, you know, the ADHD kid that just couldn't sit still. But in a football sense, you know, he just wanted to learn. He just wanted to grow. He just wanted to sponge. You know, he just wanted to learn the new tricks. He'd come in. He'd say, did you see that trick that, you know, that Ronaldo did or that Rivaldo did? Or did you see what Baggio did? Or did you see what, you know, Dennis Bergkamp did? Or, you know, because he'd always be watching football. And then he'd come to training. We'd go and practice it. And, you know, going out there, you know, walking down tunnels, wherever we were, you know, he was up for it. And he was, you know, he made you stand 10 foot tall standing behind him because we were all passionate and strong, but he just lifted us. And yeah, he was our talisman. You know, he could get you a goal and create things out of nowhere. And he had an aggression as well that sometimes spilled over, but it was, you know, it was an aggression in the sense of, I really want to win.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think people forget about that now because of how he is. But yeah, he had his run-ins, didn't he? Like with Schmeichel, that's
oh my god, yeah. Oh my god, you know, it was he was fierce. Yeah, he was aggressive. He wanted to win. He, you know, there was, you know, it's back in the day when centre halves and centre mids, you know, they came and dished it out. You know, it was tough to play centre forward.
Yeah,
you would get kicked and pinched, bitten, scratched, elbows, knees, studded. So you had to look after yourself. You had to be strong. You had to be brave. And I think that's, I personally think it's the hardest position to play. You know, you got to get your backs to the centre half. You got to run them. You will get clattered. You will get beaten up. You will get pushed, pinched and punched. You got to roll with it, and you know, you got to keep going. Be prepared to take those knocks.
You mentioned bitten. Did you ever get bitten on a football pitch?
I didn't get Suarez'd. You know, we growing up, you know, when I played, the football was very aggressive. It was very aggressive. And, you know, you get people like Vinnie Jones trying to elbow you and, you know, trying to kick you and trying to break your legs. Weirdo. But, you know, that was just part and parcel of the game, the way people talk to you, the aggression in the game. And, you know, once you got out there, you had to look after yourself. It's a proper big boys game, and you could get hurt out there if you didn't pay attention. So, we all did, but we had to mix it up. You know, Wimbledon were the toughest side, came across, and probably Millwall back in the day with Hurlock and those boys. But, you know, Wimbledon with YZ Fash and, you know, Vinny and those boys, you know, they were, but we mixed it with them. Your Jeff Thomas's, your righties, your brighties, your thornies. You know, we had some big, strong characters in our side. So, you know, that's one of the things that side could play, but it also could look after itself.
Yeah.
So we had a bit of everything in there.
And who's partnering righty?
I know you could ask me that.
Because you play with a few. Like, so, obviously, righty is the sort of standout, but there's quite a few.
I mean, I played with some fantastic striker. I played in a Charlton side where Andy Hunt scored, I think he scored 40 goals in one season. And he had a sensational season. And, you know, Jonathan Johansson, I think Jamie Cureton at Reading was exceptional, you know, as an out and out striker. He could score goals at any level in any team. Da, 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 da. So the player that I'm going to go for to play alongside righty is a player that really blew me away. And he was just a player that on his day was unplayable. He literally was unplayable. And I just loved him. I loved his attitude. I loved the way he played. He played with a smile on his face, came to training every day with a smile on his face, just loved football, loved what he was doing, enjoyed playing. I mean, Noel Whelan was a big mate of mine at Coventry, and you know, we used to spend a lot of time with these guys, but it's Darren Huckabee.
Oh, you put him up top?
Yeah, I'm going to put Darren.
I thought he might make your team, but I didn't know where.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the best position, you just got to let him go and play up there and cause havoc. Too quick, small men, you know, righty, maybe coming to feet a little bit more, linking things up and then, you know, perhaps joining in, but, you know, Darren running the channels or picking up and going, just taking on defenders and causing havoc that he can. He was just, you know, sensational, I think, at times. Yeah, I'm not, you know, again, I think perhaps the only thing I've changed is back in those days, you'd have a big man, little man. I always used to say to righty, we don't need brighty. We don't need a big man. We just need two little quick men. So, but I think, in a way, you know, it was just, I think at Coventry, he was sensational. And I saw him rip top teams apart.
Yeah, I think he scored a goal against, I think it was Man United, where he just dribbled it through everyone. Yeah, I mean, he did that almost on a weekly basis, to be honest.
Yeah, he scored a few goals like that. And there was times when we played Liverpool's, Man United's, Leeds, you know, sort of Everton's, your Arsenal's, you know, big teams. And especially at Highfield Road, he had a special, you know, sort of a connection with Highfield Road. He produced a lot of incredible performances, probably at night time as well. Maybe, you know, evening kickoffs always seemed a little bit more special under the lights. But again, special mention for Brighty, who's an incredible partner to righty. You know, I played with like Mendonca at Charlton.
Did you say with Dublin?
Yeah, Dion was there.
That's
Dion
who I thought you were going to pick up.
Yeah, do you know what? I mean, Dion over Brighty. Do you know what? I probably, you know, Dion and Brighty would have made an incredible partnership. They would have made an amazing, amazing partnership. Obviously, Dion, the big man. Yeah, I mean, Dylan was fantastic and, you know, stuck a few on his head. Incredibly in the air. Could show to feet, was a top striker. Yeah, I mean, he deserves a big mention. You know, would I have Dublin instead of Brighty? I probably would have left Brighty if you were going to have a big man, little man. That combination was sensational. But, yeah, Dion was target man, lead the line all day long. So, yeah, he'd definitely be on the bench.
With your kind of wingers anyway, how they're sort of quite in, coming in and kind of almost playing as tens at times, you can always have Huckabee going out wide if you need.
Yeah, Ray, you know, but Ray Houghton could go, you know, down the line in his day. Mm. I think Peter, obviously on the left, it might have, you know, think maybe could have had Johnny Sale down the left might work, but no, I mean, Peter's a sensational. Oh,
I can't leave him out there, can he's you? Got,
yeah, he's got to be in the side. And as I say, I think realistically, you know, I sort of see my side being a little bit more like Robertson and Trent Arnold and more like James and Alonso.
Yeah.
You know, they're the ones that would be getting the crosses in. Mm. You know, if they were playing in the modern game today, that's just the way, you know, that's probably more where they would get the crosses in. But saying that, yeah, at times those players would end up wide and they could be getting the crosses in. And there's no reason why they couldn't interchange. And if Darren ends up on the right, then just stay there for a couple of minutes or, you know, go and have a little run out there. Mm. Lovely little balance to the side, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And that centre-back partnership, the centre-mid partnership as well. Nice bit of sort of balance there too. But yeah, that's a top side. Thank you again, John, for coming on. I know you're a busy boy these days, so really appreciate it. Before we go, is there anything you want to plug or mention?
No, not really. I think the only thing I would say, who would manage that side? I would have Stevie Coppell managing that side.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I had my best spell under Stevie Coppell. It was intelligent, bright guy. He was one of my heroes as a player. Came to Palace as a young man, 28, and you know, he was just fantastic, great tactical manager, man manager, and got the best out of a lot of players. And I would imagine that was probably his best and favourite time, was that little sort of 3-4 years with Palace and finishing third and FA Cup and winning the Zenith. And yeah, that was special for him. And incredible. I mean, special mention to Paul Gascoigne, was the best player I ever played with. You know, Stuart Pearce was phenomenal. Loved my time with England and obviously with Gary Lineker up front. And, you know, those players were just incredible. So, yeah, it's great looking back and thanks for the, thanks for taking me down memory lane. So it's been a pleasure.
No worries. That's all ours. Cheers, John.
Thank you.